Thank you for coming to the podcast. This is Top Turtle MMA Podcast on CageSidePress.com. I'm Daniel Gubby Freeland, joined as always by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. The UFC is back on the road this weekend for UFC Atlantic City, headlined by Aaron Blanchfield versus Manon Fiorot. We'll of course be breaking down that fight as well as some of our favorite fights on this main card as part of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays, where we'll also give you an underdog and a parlay to make your wallet fat this weekend. Then, as always, we're bringing you guys the interviews you know and love. Kicking off the show this week is Court the Crusher McGee, and a little bit later on, we'll be talking to Kyle the Monster Nelson. But before we get to any of that great content, I do have to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Game Up Heart Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Heart Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, this is no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. It's a drink that's, well, it's really drinkable. Should have stretched before you drink it. Certainly couldn't hurt, because Game Up is not a hard seltzer. Hard seltzers just didn't work out. Game Up plays entirely in a league of its own, and it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit punch, and grape, and hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Game Up is for MMA maulers, urban fitness freaks, peak bagging badasses, tough mutter mothers, beer league brawlers, hot yoga hotties, high handicap hackers, committed cornhole huckers, or even just professional poolside posers who game up and get after it. Ask for Game Up or out as you buy beer or hard seltzer and bring it on home for the team. Game Up brings you this episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast, and it starts right now.
The hosts are ready. The fighters are ready. Listeners, make some noise if you are ready for Top Turtle MMA with Shockwave and Gumby.
All right, joining me today is Court McGee, who fights Alex Morono at UFC Vegas 90. That fight is on April 6th. So, Court, I wanted to start here. You know, it's been almost a year since we last saw you in the UFC cage, and I'm curious a little bit. Tell us a little bit about what that year away has been like for you. Was it kind of planned to take that much time off? Was it sort of necessary? Fill us in.
Yeah, so I had an injury. I had some herniated discs, so C5 through 7 needed to be replaced, and it was an injury that was sustained in the fight, another fight, but I had postponed for 6 or 7 fights. I'd done, like, everything you can do. I'd done therapy and, I mean, like, you name it, ozone injections and stem cell stuff and therapy, and it got to a point where it got real, real bad. So after this last fight, I went in and had them fix it. But I'd heard so many horror stories of people having bad neck surgeries or not being able to compete or it not going well, and so I was really nervous. It's extensive. I mean, they're either fusing or replacing discs, and so I made the decision. I kind of found the doctor I wanted to go with, asked a bunch of questions, and then committed to it. So about 2 months after, maybe a month and a half after the fight against Matt Brown, I went under. I had C5, 6, and 6, 7 replaced. So the disc in between those four vertebrae, the two disc in between those four vertebrae. And then I did therapy. I did, like, the strengthening stuff and the mobility stuff. And then I put myself through, like, a month of basically, like, fight training. Like, I was getting ready for a fight just to see if it would hold up, see if it felt good. And I felt incredible. So I sent the message to Sean Shelby and was like, hey, this is the date I want to come back. And he lined it out for me. So it was definitely planned. I had to have the surgery. It was so bad. I didn't realize how much pain I was in. I didn't realize how limiting the mobility was. Like, I had no idea. And now it's funny, like, my kids will talk to me or one of my students, and I'll look back like an old guy, like, keep my neck stiff. And then I'm like, wait, I don't have to do that no more. And I didn't realize how much pain I was in. During COVID, I started messing around doing some pull-ups, some chin-ups. And I was like, I don't know. I wasn't like anticipating breaking the world record or anything, but I was on track to break the world record. So I, you know, like 500 and under a certain amount of time, and then 1,000 and then 1,000 and under a certain time. And then I got to 2,000 and I was looking at, you know, trying to get the, it was just like over 4,000 or something like that, in 24 hours. But I was on track to break that in like, I don't know, it was like 7 or 8 hours. And I felt really good. And then I thought I tore my bicep tendon, and then come to find out, as soon as I wake up from my surgery, the pain in my bicep and my chest was completely gone. So like it had nothing to do with my bicep tendon. It was just, you know, a bad disc or a herniated disc in my neck. So yeah, I mean, I feel really good. Practices are going great. And I'll be ready to fight April 6th. That's for damn sure.
Well, that's incredible.
So my weight's good too.
And I wanted to ask you, so that's incredible, first of all, that you've been fighting for that long with, you know, all the back issues. And you mentioned turning and talking to your kids or your teammates or your students and feeling better. But is there an aspect of fighting that is felt substantially? I mean, I'm sure it all feels substantially better, but is there one aspect, you know, shooting for a double or working in the tie clinch, or is there something that sticks out as being like, holy shit, that's so much easier than it was before?
Yeah. So just like, so in an orthodox stance, right, left leg lead, shooting a double leg with your head either in the center or to the outside, like I had to completely get rid of that. So, and throughout my career, I've had, a few different injuries and a few different things you kind of have to adapt to, overcome, or stop fighting, right? And it's like I had my wrist fused 6 or 7 years ago. So, like as far as a push-up goes, like on my right hand, I can't put my hand flat on the mat because it's fused. So I have to use my knuckles. And so I have to post. And for years, like it's an adjustment where you have to build up the strength in your wrist, and build those things up so you can accommodate that. Also too, like an anaconda choke on the left side, right? No more anaconda because there's no more movement in the wrist. So it's like, okay, you can only go anaconda on the right side rather than the left side. So it's just like small adjustments, but I mean, just overall happiness and health, like I just didn't realize how miserable I was. And I was taking a lot of like anti-inflammatories. And the thing is, I don't do pain medication. I'm in long-term recovery. April 16th, if I stay sober this year, I'll have 18 years of continuous sobriety. And so even going through all the surgeries I've been through, I do them non-narcotic. So, you know, if they need to administer something while I'm out to keep me under, that's one thing. But I don't leave the hospital with pain medication. So, dude, it got to a point where I was just like, oh my gosh, like what am I doing? And so just the overall health is great. And then on top of it, yeah, shooting in, I coach my son's wrestling team. And so being in there, and he's my size now, and he's a terrific wrestler. So like going in and practicing with him and wrestling with the kids, like those things, I would have had to warm up a bunch more. You know, I would have had to keep those kids off my head, like no more head fighting, you know, and leading up to fights too, like fighting Matt where he clenches everybody so much. You know, it's like I had to drill that position, but man, like the repercussions of drilling that position were rough. Just, you know, it's like, man, for 2 or 3 days, dude, my neck was super stiff. Practices were a little bit harder. And now I don't have to deal with those things, you know, and it's just, it's so much better. So, you know, I've never like, it's always been like, I try to look at real tough situations with like curiosity and openness rather than fear. Cause I mean, to be honest, like that can control your life, especially if you're fighting at a high level, like if you're fighting for a living, and I'm sure any fighter can identify with this, but
hold on, I'm on the phone.
So it's like, you know, if like I have supported my family since 2010 through fighting, like that's been the primary source of my income. And outside of that, you know, yeah, I have a gym now and I have a little bit of income that comes from that. And then I speak professionally, to help raise funds for the McGee Project, that helps youth and young adults that struggle with addiction, in various ways. And so it's like, I have little sources of income that come outside, but for the most part, I've been, you know, providing for my family through fighting. And so, man, like, you get an injury like that and all of a sudden it's like doom and gloom, like, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay the mortgage? You know, how am I going to get my son to Fargo Nationals, high school wrestling nationals? How am I going to get groceries? You know, and then now it's kind of like, okay, well, I can figure out a way how to make a living. You know, it's like, as far as fighting goes, like, I don't know, I got 5 or 6 hours in the octagon, you know, or 4 hours or whatever it is. And I've got probably 10 to 15,000 hours of training. And I mean, the last 25 or how many ever fights I've had have been at the highest level in the world. So it's like, you can kind of adapt that, cross adapt that. And I don't have a horrible, you know, like I don't have a huge following or anything, but I also have carried myself the same way since I started. So, you know, a family man, a person in long-term recovery, and I don't run my mouth, you know? And so it's like, those are the kind of the three things that I've maintained, morally for myself. Not that talking up a fight's bad or anything. I just don't engage in it. I don't engage in politics. And I help drug addicts that struggle with addiction. So it's like, I kind of stuck to those things. So yeah, it's not the most glamorous and a lot of people don't follow, to watch the mess, but if I need to, I have opportunity outside of the UFC. I have opportunity outside of fighting, just because I've competed at a real high level for a long time. So I don't know. It's adapting and overcoming and looking at things, you know, with curiosity and openness. Has been really helpful, just because it's a tough game, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to talk to you about, because you mentioned the gym a couple of times in there too, and you know, I know, you know, some fighters who are in the UFC, it seems like every single time they walk into the octagon, they mention their gym like 7 or 8 times. You know, we know Trey Ogden, who's fighting soon, is fighting on a marathon MMA, and he's got a bunch of guys everybody knows about. But I feel like, you know, your gym has kind of gone under the radar. You know, I know you've got a bunch of guys who fight under you, but tell us a little bit about what got you into coaching and co-owning a gym.
Well, off and on for years. I mean, in 2010, when I got off the show, the guy who was coaching me kind of left and the gym kind of separated a little bit. And so I called Chuck and Liddell and was like, hey man, I don't have a coach for this finale fight. And he's like, hold on. And he called me back, you know, like 15 minutes later after having a conversation with Hackelman, John Hackelman. And he said, I want this guy with us. He flew me out there and I stayed with Chuck and trained side by side. So I became a pit guy. You know, I adapted a lot of their training methods, a lot of John's training methods, really got introduced to really high level coaching. Like Sammy Henson was the wrestling coach. Howard Davis Jr. was the boxing coach, both Olympic medalists and world medalists. Jiu-jitsu guys. I had Jake Shields. He was on the show with me. And so I trained side by side. I mean, we fought probably 5 or 6 cards on the same card. We trained together, you know, and all the jiu-jitsu guys out there. Another 10th planet guy was, Scott Epstein. He was kind of the first 10th planet black belt under Eddie Bravo. And so I was just, you know, I really, really lucked out, and just those methods and those times, training, you know, it's like I've been around for so long. It's like I've seen gyms kind of start and stop and come and go. And, you know, some of those top gyms, like American Top Team, you know, having you know, Ricardo Laborio and, you know, some of the guys that coach and train and fight out of there. Like, I've been able to work with some of those guys. I've fought a bunch of those guys. And so I've just kind of came up with some of the methods based on, you know, these guys competing at the highest level in the world. And one of my teammates, Dana Ristizabal, he's a jiu-jitsu guy. He's had about 10 pro fights, doesn't fight anymore, competes a little bit in jiu-jitsu, but is just has a knack for coaching. And is just an awesome, awesome guy. And he got married and they started a gym and he asked me if I'd partner with him. And at the time I didn't have the bandwidth. And after about 6 or 7 months, I was like, talk to my wife, and I decided to partner with him. And we have just, you know, built it from the ground up, and it's called AGEMA, A-G-E-M-A, AGEMA Jiu-Jitsu and MMA. And we've got about 200 students. It's inside of a mall. It's really kind of cool. We get a lot of traffic, like foot traffic walking past. And you have a bunch of people strangling each other, you know, wrestling or doing jiu-jitsu, and people are curious. And yeah, we're packed to the gills. And then over the last, I think we've got 19 months, we went 82-21, so 82 wins and 21 losses in MMA, from very first MMA fight to the UFC. Got some PFL people, and we get some people that come in and, you know, and practice with us off and on. And so the gym's going really well. Kind of just use the methods that I've used you know, to practice for fights, get ready for fights. And then also too, getting in there and teaching has been a lot of fun. So it's really exciting.
That's awesome to hear. Absolutely awesome to hear. Now, you know, obviously all of those methods and all of that stuff leads up to this fight at UFC Vegas 90, which is obviously what people are the most excited about right now. So let's get to talking a little bit about Alex Morano as an opponent, because, you know, it seems like, you know, if you look at some of your more recent fights, you know, your last, you know, 5, 6, 7 fights, the UFC seems to keep lining up these, you know, these legends, these guys who are, you know, really big names of the sport. And Alex Morano might not be exactly that, but he's been around for so long. I think people forget how, you know, sort of legendary his career is as well. What did you think about Alex Morano as a potential opponent, and sort of what did you think of the style matchup when they offered you him as an opponent?
I thought it was great. I don't study guys or pick, you know, and for years it's like, cause I've had a couple of different matchmakers. Originally I had Joe Silva, and then he retired, and then Sean Shelby's been my matchmaker for years and years now. But you know, it's like, matchup wise, it was exciting for me just cause he's exciting, you know. And I did watch him fight a couple of times. I watched him fight Cerrone, and I watched him fight, I think one or maybe even two other, just because I was watching the card. And he's an exciting fighter, dude. He's bomb shots. He tries to shoot. He's got good grappling. It looks like he hits submissions if he gets taken down. And so it's just like, you know, it's one of those things that's exciting. I don't look too much about what they do. Kind of a little different in what I see with most athletes, and even some of my athletes. You know, they ask if I watch footage, and I've only watched footage on one person I've ever fought in my entire career. And outside of that, I don't watch the footage. I practice, and I put into practical application where I think I can improve and get better. And, you know, it's like I've earned the right to compete against the best guys in the world. And so when I go in there, it's like, I guess if you want to say you're an artist, right? It's like, that's my canvas. And so I get 15 minutes to figure out how to beat Alex Morano. And that's an exciting, elusive thing. And then obviously I have some coaches, right? And so sometimes they'll watch some footage and, oh, well, he's good at this and he's good at this. And, you know, how can we adjust to that, you know? And so in practice, they're like, hey, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. So over, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or however long you have your camp, I can kind of like put into practical application what will work against him. And, you know, it's like, I'll be ready to go when I get there. But I've also too had opponents change, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before. So it's like, you're practicing for one guy specifically, and then now you have somebody totally different. So, I kind of, I don't know. I think it's, I mean, it's like, as far as on paper goes, it looks like it'll be an exciting matchup. So, and outside of that, you know, I've had a couple of, I don't know. I had some, neck issues, the two fights ago when I got caught on the chin in the minute and a half in the first round, like, dude, lights out, you know, hats off, congratulations, sucked. It never happened before, you know, outside of 7 or 8 years ago or 9 years ago, I got caught and stopped in the first round, but I didn't go out. And that one, I went out. And then, you know, with Matt, I mean, I feel like I had the edge and was doing real well. And then, you know, it's like getting caught with that right hand. I was up against the cage on a single leg and I hit him with an elbow and I redropped back in on a single leg and like my whole arm went numb and I had to back off. And you can watch me back off to the center of the octagon. And then I ended up taking a two and, you know, just like, man, my arm went numb and it was pretty discouraging. So I feel good about it. I feel real good about it. And it's exciting. And I don't look at him any less than if I was, you know, fighting a former champion or a champion or somebody who's ranked in the top 10 or any of that. So it's just exciting and just grateful that I get an opportunity to come out and compete again and prepare for it.
I love it. Now, usually before I let any fighter go, I like to get a prediction. I know you're a guy who likes to keep things, you know, not open and you like to have lots of avenues to win this fight, but do you have a way that you see this one ending come April 6th?
Yes. Second round stoppage via submission.
Ooh, you heard it here first, folks. This is Ben Court McGee, who fights Alex Morono at UFC Vegas 90. That fight is April 6th. Court, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it, dude.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Court the Crusher McGee. I once again am Daniel Gubby Freeland, joined now by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. Dave, I'm just going to start here because there's probably not too much that we have to say about UFC Vegas 89 last weekend. Rose Namajunas picks up kind of a lackluster win, blah, 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 blah. But the interesting thing is we get the first ever bite of the night, not fight of the night, bite of the night bonus. What do you make of Dana White giving $50,000 to somebody for getting bit in the middle of the cage? And is that the best post-fight bonus of all time?
It's certainly the wackiest. I mean, I feel like we're like delving into the whole like BMF title when we start creating titles and creating bonuses, but the situation called for it for sure. I've never seen anything like that really. So yeah, that's one for the record books.
The only other one I could think of as being as kind of wacky as that is, who is it? Was it Dennis Hallman who got tapped out while wearing a Speedo and they gave the other guy a $50,000 bonus? I want to say it was Brian Ebersole. They gave him a $50,000 bonus for getting that crap off the TV bonus or something like that. So yeah, it's up there as one of the weirdest ones of all time, but that's pretty much the only thing we'll ever remember this past Saturday's event for. And that's maybe that's all we have to say about it.
Yeah, exactly. Not memorable in any other way, but I'll tell you what we hopefully will remember and what will be memorable. And it's this weekend's card for UFC Atlantic City. So let's break out our favorite segment on the show, Fights, Dogs, Parlays. We'll break down a couple of fights, give a dog to play, a parlay to play. But before we do, Gumby, who sponsors this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays?
Fight Stocks and Parlays brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with a 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. And it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit punch, and grape. And it hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer. Bring it on home for the team.
This is a very exciting main event. Erin Blanchfield, who we've been high on since her debut in the UFC. She's a minus 200 favorite to Manon Fiorot, a plus 165 dog. Blanchfield undefeated in the UFC. She has guillotine chokes, rear naked chokes, a Kimura. She is a grappling ace. She's coming off a unanimous decision win over Talia Santos back in August of last year. And she's running into Manon Fiorot, who certainly should be a dog, but let's face it, she's on a bit of a run herself. 2 TKO wins in the UFC, 6-0 total, on a run of 4 unanimous decision wins in the UFC, has never lost in the UFC, but finds herself the dog here. Who you got?
Yeah, I think she should be a dog here too, but to the extent the number is gone, is kind of wild to me. Like, if you just go 5 or 6 days ago, this fight was like Erin Blanchfield negative 120, Erin Blanchfield negative 125, and now we're seeing her all the way up to negative 200. The people are dumping money on Erin Blanchfield. And I think to an extent, for some good reason, right? Like, I like Blanchfield a lot in this fight because basically, in order to pick Manon Fiorot, you have to say she has to stuff the takedowns or she has to survive on the ground with Erin Blanchfield. And I just don't think there are any women's flyweights who can do that, right? Like, I don't think Alexa Grasso can do that. Never mind Manon Fiorot. Also, while she's got some TKOs, really not against the, like, top tier of flyweight, so she's gonna have to go 25 minutes with somebody who I think has 25 minutes of gas and 25 minutes of grappling and 25 minutes of dangerous grappling. So I like Erin Blanchfield here. I do worry that this line has kind of gotten out of control though, because I really loved it at negative 125, negative 130. Negative 200 is kind of out of control for me.
Yeah, I'm all over Blanchfield though, regardless of the number, but I gotta say, depending on your risk aversion profile, couple bucks on Fiorot at the dog money. Not the worst play. Let's move on. Vicente Luque is a minus 120 favorite. Joaquin Buckley just coming in at a plus 100. Vegas doesn't know what to make of this. Vicente Luque coming off a win over RDA, but he's 1-2 in his last 3. Buckley on a 2-fight win streak, but if you peel it back further, he's 2-2 in his last 4. So again, Vegas doesn't know what to make of this. What do you make of it?
I'm going to lean to Vicente Luque here. While I like Joaquin Buckley's striking, really what he sort of made his abilities work at welterweight is by mixing in the wrestling and kind of having a more diverse skill set, right? Like, he scored a couple of takedowns in both of his fights since he's come down to welterweight, and that's kind of won him the decision. It tired out Andre Fialu, which allowed him to win that fight by a TKO because he just kind of outworked him and made him tired. I don't think that's a possibility against Vicente Luque. You mentioned he's coming off a win over RDA. He took RDA down 8 times. I think his wrestling is far superior to Joaquin Buckley. I think we've seen him kind of lose some of his durability, but I don't think to a point where I have to like really worry about it against Joaquin Buckley here. And I think even his offensive wrestling might play up. So give me Vicente Luque here as a slight favorite.
Bruno Silva is a big favorite at minus 285 to Chris Weidman, a plus 230. Weidman made his pro debut 15 years ago in Atlantic City, and I can only hope this could be the fight where he hangs up his gloves full circle back in Atlantic City. Weidman is on a 2-fight losing streak. If you really want to peel it back further, he is 2-7 in his last 9 fights. And that would be, over the course of, 9 years. He, of course, was inactive after that horrific, ankle break, but, he, in the past few years, since the long layoff, came back with a win, unanimous decision over Omari Akhmedov, but lost to Uriah Hall. That was the leg injury, actually. And then huge layoff, comes back and loses to Brad Tavares. It seems like the UFC is trying to set him up with Bruno Silva, who he himself is 1-4 in his last 5. But he finds himself the big favorite here. I assume you're taking Silva. Would love to hear about a path to victory for Weidman.
I mean, I think for Weidman, he's just got to turn it into a wrestling match. The longer he spends on the feet here, the more dangerous it is. Because like you said, Bruno Silva is 1-4 in his last 5 fights, but if you want to peel it back, he had a 3-fight winning streak before that. All 4 of his wins in the UFC have come by knockout. And so when you talk about a guy who keeps winning fights by knockout, and granted, not against world beaters, Wellington Turman, Andrew Sanchez, Jordan Wright, who just main evented Fury FC this weekend, like not against world beaters. But the fact of the matter is he's knocking people out. And we got Chris Weidman in there, whose brain I have to assume is not doing all that well these days. He seems like he's taken a pretty savage beating in quite a few fights and doesn't look like he's his old self. I think Bruno Silva's the worst kind of guy to put him up against at this point. So, yeah, I don't love, you know, going out and picking a guy who's almost negative 300 and 1-4 in his last 5 fights. But I think you got to ride with Silva here.
Our dog of the week, our official dog of the week, is Andre Petroski, plus 180.
Yeah, I love Andre Petroski here against Jacob Malkin. Malkin is a guy who really relies on his grappling, and he's going to be up against a guy who I think wrestles a little bit better than him. You know, I like the guys from Team Daniel Gracie, down with John Marquez, MMA. Like, and Petroski, I think is only being an underdog here because he's coming off that tough loss to Michel Pereira. And look, Michel Pereira, he's a different animal. He's a guy who I don't think a lot of people know what to do with. Jacob Malkin, pretty simple game plan. Not particularly great boxing, which actually might be an second advantage that our Petroski has. And then, you know, in addition to that, he wants to grapple. He wants to work his jiu-jitsu. He wants to work on top. I think this might be an instance where he has to work from the bottom. I also think it might be a grappling or a striking disadvantage to him. Give me Petroski at this inflated number.
All right, we'll wrap up on this. Our parlay to play, Nursultan Ruzaboev, a minus 285, and pair him together with Jamal Emmers, a minus 205. So two pretty strong favorites over 2-1, but it does get you plus 101 odds. Let's hear it.
So, yeah, I like Nursultan Ruzaboyev, first of all, because he's just an absolute beast in there, knocking people out super fast. And he's going to be fighting Cedricus Dumas, who's out on bail right now. That's right. Mm. He's out on bail right now. You can't imagine this guy's training camp has gone really well, being that he was being held without bail for a little while. They have seemingly released him, and it looks like he's going to make his fight date. But you can't really want to back a guy who's up against the knockout artist and seemingly had his training camp interrupted that way. So give me Nursultan Ruzaboyev at the front end. And I like Jamal Emmers at the back end. I know people are high on Nate Landwehr. They maybe see some nice dog money here on him. But the fact of the matter is, I think Jamal Emmers is one of the more underrated guys in the UFC. He's got outstanding wrestling. His grappling looks really, really good. If he didn't get caught in that knee bar from Pat Sabatini, I think we'd be talking about him a lot higher right now than he is, because the guy just gets after it. He's got huge reach, great takedown defense. I liked how he was looking against Jack Jenkins, although he wound up losing a split decision there. He seems to beat the guys he's supposed to beat, and I think this is one of those instances here. So yeah, give me Jamal Emmers, Ruzaboyev, and plus 101.
Boom. That wraps it up for this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays. Let us know how we did. Did we do you right? Did we do you dirty with these picks? At Top Turtle MMA on the social media. Gumby, we're having a party here. What should we do next?
We're going to transition now to my interview with Kyle Nelson, who is fighting this week in Atlantic City. We're going to get to that interview for you right now. All right, and joining me today is Kyle Nelson, who fights Bill Algeo at UFC Atlantic City. That fight is on March 30th. So, Kyle, I wanted to start here. Looking back at your record, you know, 4 out of your first fights in the UFC were losses. You had a, you know, kind of a close draw with Doho Choi. Since then, you've completely turned things around. 2 very dominant wins against highly touted prospects. To what do you sort of attribute that turnaround?
Yeah, I think I think the turnaround kind of started in London with Jai Herbert. I was able to, and we went the 3 rounds. I thought I kind of got the better of him in that one, and then went back down to 145 against Doho Choi, and then same kind of thing. I was able to, you know, get the 3 rounds in, and again it was a close fight. You know, some people thought he took it, some people thought I took it. But yeah, just, you know, getting in there, you know, getting the, you know, fighting through the 3 rounds and kind of proving I could do it, now that we've kind of dialed in my weight cuts and my weight management, you know, just gave me the confidence to start, you know, slowly put my foot on the gas pedal a little bit more in the fights. And you've seen that, you know, I think kind of escalate in my last 2 fights. And you're going to see it even more in this one. Now my cardio is better than ever. We've got the weight cut down, so it means I can really, you know, turn up the gas, and I don't have to worry so much about, you know, my body failing me.
I like that. Now, you know, you mentioned obviously some extra cardio work in there and starting to believe in your cardio, but you also mentioned in there sort of believing in yourself, believing that you could go those three rounds, believing that you could put the pedal to the metal. Was that like a mental obstacle for you? Was that a hurdle that you felt like you had to overcome in some of those earlier fights where you couldn't go, you know, maybe as hard as you wanted early on in fights?
I think I went too hard in some of my first fights, you know, like I think in all my fights, I generally like I won the first round and, you know, got the better of my opponent. Skill wise, I feel like I did better. And I think on most of, if not all the scorecards, I'd won all the first rounds. And then just, yeah, I think kind of bad weight cut, you know, kind of didn't manage everything properly. Just meant that, you know, my body wasn't able to hold it up for three rounds. You know, I always trained my cardio and, you know, in sports specific training, my cardio was always great. It was just like after we did the weight cut, you know, it wasn't there. I was only had around like a round or a round and a half in me. And once we kind of dialed some of the weight cut stuff in, then I've been able to kind of showcase, you know, the cardio that I've had all along that just didn't quite make it to the fight because I lost it during the weight cut somewhere.
That's interesting. Now, was there anything in particular you did to try to like hone in that weight cut? Was it, you know, just research on your own part and making sure that your weight was in the right spot? Did you get a nutritionist? Did you know you lean on a coach? Was there something that sort of helped you dial that in?
Yeah, like I've always worked with, you know, my nutritionist out of the sport lab. But once I got together with my fiance, she's been, you know, with me almost 24/7. You know, these last couple of years, and she really helps me implement a lot of the nutrition stuff. And if there's stuff I'm unsure of, you know, she's kind of my go-to person. I can always ask her and we can adjust stuff on the fly. And she comes with me to all my fights. Now, my last few fights, she's been in my corner and, it's definitely helped a ton.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Now, you know, in addition to, you know, obviously having her in the corner, I did want to point out too that, despite being somebody who kind of came up in the Apex era, if you don't mind me using that term, you're a guy who's not really fought a lot in the Apex. You know, they keep giving you, you know, these live event fight cards. You know, you mentioned the one in London. You know, you fought Fernando Padilla on Doce UFC, the big T-Mobile arena. You know, you got Nunes and Aldana up in Canada. You know, you've had big arenas. And again, maybe not the biggest arena here in Atlantic City, but you're getting another crowd-filled card versus, you know, those sterile ones we get in the Apex. Is that been special for you? Do you care about that kind of thing when it comes fight time?
I mean, like, I'm going to perform either way. I do think it's an added little bonus to compete in front of fans and stuff like that. But I think that's something I earned, you know, putting on some of the fights that I did. You know, exciting kind of action-packed fights. And I think that's definitely what the UFC is looking for in, you know, the kind of live audiences and stuff like that.
I totally agree. And you're getting another person who's going to sort of oblige you with that kind of fight here. You know, they offer you the name Bill Algeo. Obviously, he's had a lot of fights similar to you. Very exciting, very back-and-forth guy. What were sort of your first thoughts when you heard his name as the name they wanted to pair you with on this card?
Yeah, I mean, I was excited. I, you know, as soon as they said his name, you know, I knew exactly who he was. I remembered his fights. And I remember watching his fights, you know, thinking, you know, about what I would do and what it would be like fighting him. And yeah, I think now that we've got my weight on, like my weight cut dialed in and my cardio is great, I think this is a perfect fight for me. He's going to be somebody that can stay in there with me, put on a good fight. But I think skill-wise, I've got a bit of an edge on him pretty much everywhere. So I definitely think this is going to be a good fight for the fans.
For sure. Now you mentioned in there, you know, when you saw him fight and you remember watching him fight, you remember thinking about what you would do against him. When you're watching fights, is that sort of your mentality all the time? Are you able to shut that off? Is it just your mentality when you watch people in and around your weight class?
Yeah. I mean, it's when I watch any 45ers that I think are kind of, you know, around me in the UFC. When I watch, you know, like the title fights, you know, I just like to sit back and enjoy that. and you know, especially when I'm watching it, you know, when it's live, sometimes I'll go back and then I'll, you know, study it and do a little bit of homework. But really, for the most part, when I'm watching, you know, kind of top five guys right now, I just like to sit back and enjoy it as a fan. And then I'll go back later and kind of pick it apart and think about what I'd do. But when I'm watching, you know, guys in the top 10, top 15, guys that I'm looking to compete against really soon, then I, you know, I dial in and I you know, I turn on study mode, even if I'm watching the fight live at a meet and greet or something like that.
Is that sort of your coach's mentality just coming out? Or is that, you know, you are a cerebral fighter, you are a guy who wants to do that, but you're also, you know, like I said before, you're a guy who owns his own gym and kind of has that kind of coach side to him.
Yeah, I mean, I find it's a happy medium. I know some guys don't like to watch any tape. Some guys like to watch a ton of tape. I think there's a happy medium in there in the middle. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, obsess day and night over Bill. You know, I've got my own life going on, and there's stuff outside the UFC too that I think you need to focus on as well to round out your life. So I, you know, I take that and I, you know, I do my work when I need to, and then I don't have a problem turning that off. And you know, I watch a couple of his fights. You know, we build the game plan, and I let my coaches, you know, if they want to study him day and night, you know, that's up to them. Or if they find, you know, the holes and the strategy we want to work with, you know, off of, you know, a couple of his fights, then that's fine. But yeah, I try not to obsess too much over it.
I dig it. Now, I did want to ask you one more question before we get to the nitty gritty of the fight here. And that's, you know, you just turned away two kind of highly touted prospects in Fernando Padilla and Blake Builder. There are guys people had kind of pegged as being, you know, featherweights to keep an eye on. You turned them away really easily, but now they're going back to giving you guys kind of on your same rung, guys who are, you know, winning lots of fights, guys who are putting on exciting fights. You know, Bill Algeo is not just another prospect to turn away. He's a, you know, bona fide UFC fighter. Did you relish in that role of sort of turning the prospects away? Do you like the fact that you've kind of, you know, graduated from that step again and are back to fighting people a little bit higher up? What's sort of your feeling on that?
Yeah, I mean, they're all like tough opponents. Any fight you're going to have in the UFC, it's going to be a tough opponent. And sometimes those prospects, like those up and comers, sometimes they're tougher than, you know, some of the guys that have been in the UFC for a while and you know, have some wins and some losses and whatever. So taking on the prospects, especially undefeated prospects, you never know exactly what you're going to get. So that's definitely a tough challenge. But I, you know, I appreciate that the UFC has kind of noticed my hard work. You know, they've realized what I've done, you know, in my last couple fights. And I think, you know, this is a way of them kind of rewarding me, moving me up the ladder. But at the end of the day, I mean, a fight's a fight. Unless I'm fighting for the title, then it doesn't really matter too much for me. It's just about, you know, putting another notch on the belt and moving forward.
Well, speaking of that notch on the belt, I always like to end these things with a prediction. So let me know how this one ends in UFC Atlantic City come March 30th.
We're going to see an early second round TKO.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Kyle Nelson, who fights Bill Algeo at UFC Atlantic City. That fight, once again, March 30th. Kyle, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And that's going to do it for another episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast. We want to thank you, the fans, for tuning in each and every week. We would not have a show without you guys. We also want to thank our sponsors, Game Up Heart Hydration, and remind you guys that you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Top Turtle MMA in both of those locations. And until next week, I'm Dana Gilby Freeland. He's Shockwave Dave Tremonte. We'll catch you then.